I call the October 18th, 2022 regular board meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Great. First, I'm going to do a little disclaimer. This meeting is being recorded and posted on our website after the meeting. Once Commissioner Spain asked me to call the roll, which he did, you have to indicate you are here as well as give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record. So Commissioner Bourne is absent. Mr. Hovey?
Here, and permission to record.
Commissioner Schneider?
Here, permission to record.
Commissioner Spain?
Here, permission to record.
And President Brooks is here, but we have to vote her in.
Yes, here.
Yes.
Permission to record.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve President Brooks to attend the meeting via Zoom.
So moved.
Second discussion. All right, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Kobe?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider? Mr. Spain?
Yes.
All right.
Motion passed. Okay. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items?
No.
I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Second. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Kobe?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes.
Mr. Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person.
I believe it's only staff in the audience, so.
All right, everybody. Great. Okay.
All right. I would like to introduce some staff for our summer camp presentation. We have Adam Wall, Janet Stevens, Savannah Martin, and we also would like to introduce Erica, who is our new recreation manager. So if you want to put it. And also in the audience is Jessica. All right. Fuck really loud. You mean?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. We're here to obviously summarize the report that we put in the board packet about our 2022 summer camp. So, take an opportunity to introduce myself and the team. Obviously, I'm Adam Ward, Assistant Director of the Recreation Facility. Let the rest of the team introduce themselves. So, we'll start.
I am Savannah Martin, the Early Childhood Supervisor, and we oversaw our preschool.
Hi, I'm Shannon Stevens. I'm the athletic program manager. I oversaw the students and special education.
And I'm Erica Dorgati. I'm the new arts and youth program manager, and I will be overseeing youth camps in the summer of 2023 for the summer model of camp adventure.
She oversaw for 1 week.
3 days.
Oh, 3 days. Okay.
So tonight we're just doing a quick overview of staff and training, preschool, youth, and teen camps. Look at our counseling training, action class stuff for teen camps, and then a little quick dive into this has been in-depth survey and considerations for our programming as well as the kind of perspective we need to position on our camp program.
So this summer we had a hybrid training model. We had in-person training and Zoom training for our camp staff. We also brought on a speaker, Michael Brandywine, who's a professional speaker who comes to all different districts to specifically talk about the camp and how to make it the best for the participants. Also broke down staff, our expectations of our staff, and really got an interview of that. We introduced a welcome breakfast this year where our camp staff can meet our full-time staff all the way from the parks department to we also had Michael bring one come back for a midsummer training. So he came in and kind of just met up with all of our counselors and checked where they were in the membership and kind of touched base on how we can, you know, get over that and do our midsummer hump. And it was great. The program manager finally got some touch base with our counselors and make sure everyone was moving in the same direction. So this is from our staff survey from the summer. Over 95% of our staff agreed or strongly agreed that they had a positive experience. We also, from the staffing breakdown, this summer we're going to see over 60% of retention rate for our staff. Looking at it, we had 18 leadership staff returning. We had a lot of new counselors this summer, but that's just because we're moving people up into the more director and counselor leadership roles. Due to the high retention rate, we saw an increase in wages, and hopefully we will continue to retain staff, so we'll do that as a trend on this presentation. Another slide from our staff survey was 90% of the staff received proper training for their to perform their job well, and 97% of our staff had the tools to perform their jobs. So our preschool camps, we have four camps that run under our Bears camp. So our baby Bears are under 24 months. It is our parent and top class. Our teddy bears are 2 years old, and bears are 3, and koalas are 4 years old. With the exception of our baby bears, the teddy and handy and koalas, they have in-house performance at home, they attend the top shooting program, and then our koalas are on walking trips to the local parks and to the local beach. For our enrollment for our bears camps, it remains kind of steady. And this is due to our classroom capacity and our DCFS ratio that we have to uphold. For our Bears Camp financials, we have seen an increase in our expenses, which is due to the high retention rate, as mentioned. We also have some staff who work our ELC program throughout the year that work camps, and then they've been here longer and they have a higher wage. Our kindergarten camp is for those that are entering kindergarten. They as well attend in-house performers and go to the local parks and the beach. Some highlights of our main line performer, bubble performer, the Broadway, which brought different amphibians and reptiles, and Rose Dew Park was a favorite. Our kindergarten enrollment has seen a slight decrease, but overall remains steady, and this is again due to our classroom capacity and DCFS ratios that we have to hold. Our kindergarten financials is very similar with our Bears camp. We've seen an increase in the expenses. This is due to wages. We have some full year-round staff, and then as well, we've hired extra directors for our stay and play and our plan and care, which has helped greatly with the transition that happened during those hours. And then we have our counseling and training programs for CITs. They're entering 7th through 10th grade. We offer a full day and a half day program. The half day program works with our preschool camp and the full day with our youth options. And so they help with the counselors, they get assigned a group, and they help with daily operations tasks. We train them with the hope that they will one day become counselors. And then our goal for that has remained the same, and we kind of expect that to be the trend. And then our expenses with the counselor training, so our revenue has increased with the amount of staying the same, which is due to influx in who's registering for the full day program. Are they doing 8 weeks versus the 4 weeks? And then revenue or expenses, again, wages, we hired two directors, one for the cafe, one for the full day. And then we're looking at as well with them going on field trips with their campers. That will increase.
So Sun Fun is our first and third grade camp, staple of Glenbrook from a camp standpoint. They've made a wide range of activities throughout the week, from field trips to Glenbrook beach days. They'll also go bring in external contractors at special events and special team days. Some of the highlights of this summer were the Travis Dog team. They did a standard field release and park out less than we usually go to about 2 to 4 water parks throughout the year and the fall. Sunfun enrollment is starting to come slightly back towards pre-COVID enrollment numbers. We're expecting those to be trending back towards the 2018 and 2019 numbers. If we go to the next slide, we'll kind of fall in line with where the revenue, overall revenue is, and then what an excess of revenue or expenditure is. Again, you see the big jump from 66 last year with 116, now it's getting further to start reviewing field trips, brought in more contractors, our staffing costs have gone up too, just to make sure that we're providing that type of experience. And we're seeing that trend and continuing as we come into fall with these off trip plus and cost. It's going to be a challenge that we're going to have to watch and monitor and adjust accordingly. Camp Adventures, our fourth and fifth grade camp. Very similar to Sun Fun, they have Camp Victoria Days, we travel to the beach. We do a variety of field trips from the White Sox team, back to the airport, or some of the kind of favorites of the group, and then, of course, Sun Fun at one of the parks. Camp Adventure enrollment also dips back up right in line with how Sun Fun did. We're not so pre COVID, but we're trending that way. And the financials fall follow the same trend where revenue is starting to get back normal, pre-COVID number of expenses still are up significantly to this in the format.
So action questions are some camp. It's for participants entering sixth grade all the way from 10th grade. Some of the highlights that we have this summer look like from Six Flags, all the way to the White Sox game, Mountain Adventures, and Get College. For this year, enrollment was up significantly due to the 1 week registration being the most popular at the camp. So these are full enrollments that we did see a lot of people going to 1 week, which also reflects in our revenue. Revenue was up due to that and those enrollments. Our expenses have increased because in 2021, we only took one field trip. This year, we went back to two field trips a week. And busing, as everyone has mentioned, is just continuing to go up, and three out of our four staff is fully trained staff, so we need to keep that in mind for other teams. Game on this summer was our two specialties camps. We have game on sports for boys and game on sports for girls. We're at 58% of residents were enrolled in this camp. We see higher non-resident numbers in this camp, just because it's a specialty camp. From 2021 to 2022, our revenue is slightly down. This is due to offering only 9 weeks instead of 10 weeks. For this summer, we're dropping down to 8 weeks, but we are lining up with our traditional camps. So parents and participants will have the opportunity to do 2 weeks of Sun Fun and Camp Adventure and 2 weeks of Game On. This was the first summer we offered Game On sports for boys. It ran for 3 weeks, about half day. We are looking to offer pop-up events, and we are offering after school Game On sports for boys program to increase enrollment. Hopefully, we can run it for a full 8 weeks or so.
A question: do you think enrollment in the Game On camps affects Sun Fun, our action quest?
Yeah, and between Game On and Aquatic Facility, the Aquatic definitely affected our daily camp from the traditional Sun Fun and Adventure action quest. Even the state numbers affect that.
From your perspective, are you just is that when you added these camps, were you hoping to add more campers or just offer different experiences?
A little bit of both. So different experiences with the specialty camps. People want the flexibility. So question family is a question of two options. Same Game On is having two options. So the people that want to do it overnight camps, so they'll be able to come to our field. So we are seeing a trend that is just with song action. We want that ultimate flexibility to pop in for 1 week options or 2 week options to do overnight camp or go elsewhere. To your point, as far as number we did, expect to do a little bit of dip. But with Game On doing more of a regional draw too, we bring them like Forest and Northbrook and Highland Park, which is present. We see that allow us to kind of keep our top dollar kind of on our trend.
What we're finding is where people are asking just through from talking to parents and or surveys and things like that, is that they want the more diversity. So if we're the kids were in Sun Fun for a couple of years, they want to look at they still want to do that for a couple of weeks, but we want to go to something. So if we didn't offer this, they'd probably go someplace else. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to keep in mind our camp system by offering a variety instead of them going only doing 2 weeks here and going someplace else. They've asked for this. So we think it's a good risk to take to do the diversify our portfolio to people interested in coming back to the classes, whether it's 2 weeks here, 2 weeks here. So we're spreading out the revenue as opposed to camp. So we look at the overall budgets, even though some of those may have gone down. We look at aquatic sailing has gone up, and this one has gone up at all. Balance is also actually the way the revenue. And that.
Okay, thanks.
From the overall camp financial trends, you can see the blue bars is trending positively from overall revenue, but both of our expenses are also trending upward to the red line. It was a big jump from 2019 to where we're at this year. So we're off by over $130,000 for the last year. So again, it's partially due to the cost of the field trips, bringing in more contractors and activities. The additional revenue costs continue to trend upward. But we're going to see that turn to change, you know, as well as trying to retain really high quality staff. You know, it's going to make a difference between a really good summer or as we saw. I know at the youth side, the student side, especially with having return staff, maybe put all the staff at the summer. Until camp enrollment continues to trend up. Now, both these numbers didn't include sailing aquatics numbers either. That's our point about the flexibility. That's why that total enrollment number is trending up. So we're getting, we might get people getting off enrollment for the overall enrollment up. And that's partially due to people who think it's stop for each portal dot instead of needing to see our whole option. Now we're jumping into some of our survey results from our parent assistance survey. So we can see really great feedback on one of the registered child can't get 80% out of the about 150 respondents that we had responded to that they were re-signed up to camp. And as far as value of camp relation with youth, we're seeing right in line where we've been the last several times we've done surveys, so 90% for the last one. And then staff ratings is looking at customer service staff, our program managers, management staff, and the team staff. Compared to this year to last year, the one thing I didn't want to know is if you look at 2021, slightly helpful, not helpful. We're in like 18% ranges of being not helpful or slightly helpful. And then you look at 2022, and we're at 35%. So we saw significant improvements there across the board. But kudos to our whole team. Just really doing a fantastic job meeting the needs of the community. And then overall, camp satisfaction is a possible operating. We're still in the 4% plus, but you're being satisfied with it. So, keep in mind what we're saying.
And even though we had a really awesome summer, really successful summer in 2022, we're always looking to improve. So, we have some future considerations for the summer of 2023. One of those things is kind of streamlining our registration process by eliminating some redundant activity numbers. So for example, in Sun Fund, instead of registering by grade, just registering for Sun Fund, the name that you like. We also will be switching from using CampDocs for camper information forms to ePass, which is kind of a little bit better customer service. It's got better reviews, and it will be easier for the parents to use, not just for camp, but it will also apply to our other recreation programs, including Kids Club and ELC, and then we'll have that information for other programs they're registered in. So kind of eliminate some software redundancies. We also are looking to get Bamboo HR, so another very highly reviewed software, which will streamline the seasonal onboarding process. So it'll make it easier for staff to do their onboarding paperwork and also reduce the full-time staff administration time processing that paperwork. In addition, Bamboo HR has online training platforms for our seasonal staff, so it will reduce the amount of full-time staff time training our staff and allow some online options for their training experience. We already have the camp app, but we, from our survey results, found that we could maybe use it a little bit more or more efficiently, so add some more photos, send some more parent reminders. And then also use that in case of emergency, if there's like an urgent update that we need to push the parents, we utilize that camp app a little bit more. That also goes with the Brightmail app as well. We talked about it many times, but staff wages are going to continue to be a challenge and an area of concern that we need to monitor. So the rising cost of minimum wage in addition to our high staff retention rate, is going to continue to increase our wage expense line item. So figuring out how we can balance that with our camp fees and if those need to be adjusted. And then same goes for inflation. Everything's more expensive. We've seen this fall. Bus rates are increasing quite a bit. So how do we balance the really high cost of all the contractors and the specialty things, with our camp fees? Keep that in mind for when we're planning for 2020.
Before they go off, I would like to applaud all these fine managers and department heads. They did a phenomenal job this summer. Obviously, everybody knows it was a staff changeover right before camp starts. So when I see those kind of evaluation numbers, survey results, that's outstanding. So it shows that the consumer, the participants, never knew anything was happening, which you'd like to see. We want to make sure that we have continued service, whether a staff is out or whatever. So that's definitely to them. And we had some amazing site directors that stepped up, and they've been with us before, and they just were excited about the opportunity, and it showed. So kudos to all of you and them for a great summer and a safe summer. So I would like to see that too. I think we focus on the financial, but it's a great time. Every time I walk that by with special events and trips and just general activities, and they had a safe summer. So that's really important.
I thought it was really impressive results. I mean, high satisfaction with parents, staff levels, the returns are very high.
I would add too, I think the Highland Park event this summer was a big, at least for my daughter's in kindergarten, and I know it was significant to a lot of families, and I thought it was handled well, and I kudos to the staff for handling the situation this summer. I'm sure it was a sensitive among many of the camp reports.
There was a chart on there that showed a 90-10 split for the employees. That was satisfaction. 90% is awesome. Achieving 90% is just incredible, especially given the fact that things changed. Was it summer of 2021, 2020 of challenges, various times. What are the couple of things you guys can do to push that up in the bottom? What were the staff say about? Was it wages? Was it training? Was it hours they worked? Like, what do you think? If you were to do a double click into that, what do you think the staff?
And remember that 10% might be one staff. So I want to make that very well clear.
If that's the case, I would suggest that next time you put your N on each page, remember there was an N of 150 for the parents, but I don't know what's the staff. It could be. There's about 40 staff for eight. Got it. So four. So how can you make those four staff? What can you do?
For me, it's changed, and I think we may start to not keeping them in the loop and educated on a process. Taking their, without becoming a democracy, getting their input where applicable, especially at the director level, because they're the only ones that are going to get the buy-in down first for us. So that's my point, is building that buy-in on staff is essential to creating a thing. I know we really work hard on using other people to build that buy-in. And it starts with the director. If they're buying the leader goals, then the times are going to buy into it. We saw it all with the office for sure. And I'm sure that they'll use those out as well.
When is registration for next year? December 1st. Okay, I knew it was going to come up. December 1st.
So many people are asking, is it December? I think it's just.
Because other camps were in September.
That's why. I mean, we tried to push it back, but. Other camps are going out, and people get mad because they can't compare our camps to their camps.
we do that deposit now, so it's not all from the $2 million dollars, but the family involved very common with students.
Yeah.
A lot of parents want to get locked in for the store, but they don't want to be worried about witness and points full of stuff.
I don't think they're enjoying the Thanksgiving dinner for the learning center. So it's going to go out of it's probably
okay. I see.
Yeah, no, it's some kids. Like, this is tough. All right.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for being here. You're more than welcome to stay for the review meeting, but if you might go home. All right. Yep.
Okay. 7 months of the fiscal year is complete, and John will provide a synopsis of the reports.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Spain. Good evening, everyone. So I'll start on PDF page 61 of 135 of the packet here, which is just the monthly financial analysis here for September. So just going by department, starting here at the top of page, the Recreation Department looks very strong. As a reminder, we still have some contractual expenditures that will catch up and reduce that excess of revenue over expenditures. But nonetheless, when comparing to previous years, very strong activity out of the Recreation Fund, as evidenced by our camp presentation tonight too. As far as Children's Circle goes, so 86,000 of that decrease this year is related to one-time grant revenue that was received in the prior year for the Child Care Restoration grant. As a side note, we did get 66,000 in additional funding. We received that funding in early October, so we see that gap close a bit come next month. So that's a good thing to report. Fitness departments. We had a couple expenditures this month, which were a little higher just this month when comparing expenditures to prior months. I think we installed some rubber flooring, a new stretching machine, so just some capital items and some maintenance that was done down there. Still in the black code for a cumulative basis for the year. Beach and boating are obviously starting to wind down, so revenue will come to a halt here shortly, and then we'll just see the expenses coming in for general administration allocations. So primarily salaries and benefits for the rest of the year. Watts, again, not pretty comparable to the prior year. We'll get obviously get that cranked up in another month or so. G&A, again, it's going to be trending below what it was in the prior years because we're directly allocating health insurance to the various departments. Parks lower than expenditures are lower than the prior year. Salaries have a big part of that. Just a reduction in the amount of salaries there, and then retirement plays into that decrease. Rec admin take-up department. So here we're starting to see the property tax difference. Last year we received about $300,000 of property tax revenue that were allocated to this fund. And this year we received zero. So we're going to fall behind a bit on revenues compared year over year for both rec. Same for corporate admin, about $8,500 in revenue this month. Pretty much all interest income, whereas that would be on the $500,000 to $600,000 for property tax revenue for the normal year. So still have not gotten that second installment. All indications are we should be receiving it starting in December. Certainly the county does not want to extend beyond the December 31 date.
Get punished for it.
I'm sorry,
is it penalties for it?
We get punished.
It's personal deduction here. A personal return, so they'd be potentially losing votes at that point if that's not done. So that's what we're expecting, and we'll get into it a bit more when we discuss those items. But we still don't have the extended rates yet for 2021 either, so we're still working through those issues.
There are a long lag between when they're collected. I was actually, when I read this packet, I researched it because I wanted to. Or about it, and it sounds like they're not going to send out the the bills until after Thanksgiving, which basically gives 1 month to pay. And I was thinking we probably would collect it until January, February.
Probably January. There's okay. A bit of a lag. It's not significant.
Okay.
But again, they're working with new systems now and computer compatibility issues. So hopefully it's what you would in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Good question. Beyond the normal financial report for this month, so starting on PDF page 62, just given we were just past our 6 month mark for our fiscal year, I just wanted to provide an update in terms of projections. So that's what pages 62, 63, and 64 of the packet represent. So page 62 is just a reminder of very high level summary of where we budgeted for going into this fiscal year. And if you see middle of the page all the way to the right, that's our projected ending fund balance for our major operating funds, so the corporate fund and the recreation fund. So we budgeted that to be at around 64% for our major operating funds. And then below that is our non-major special revenue funds, and also our debt service funds. And then capital projects, we had budgeted into a fund balance of about $2 million. So getting into page 63, this is where we're looking, again, mid-year. These are still fairly well projections, but as part of the budget process, staff goes through the projections based on the knowledge they have at this point. And if you look at the numbers, it does look like we're going to do significantly better than budgeted. Which is good, certainly, you know, that we're going to have residual fund balance. But, you know, as we kind of look at this and ask the question, well, you know, what's driving this performance? I added page 64 here, which provided some assumptions and mainly it assumed we were fully staffed. So what I did was really look at, you know, what was driving the increase in projected ending fund balance. And on the expense side, the biggest piece of it was just budgeted positions that are going unfilled. So Children's Circle in particular, if we looked at the wages budgeted in the Children's Circle department, including benefits, that's about $300,000. Looking at the Parks department, that's in about the $150,000 in unfilled positions. So some of those key positions that we've talked about, obviously kind of the restructuring and staffing for Children's Circle, I'm hoping to get those filled and, you know, just actually start incurring those expenditures that need to be there to, you know, successfully run these programs. Custodial is an area where we've really been struggling still. Part-time custodians are very hard to, tough to find right now, so it's another aspect of it. We luckily did bring a part-time custodian on full-time recently, but still have some vacancies as it relates to custodial duties. So what I wanted to do was just summarize where we would be if we were fully staffed. And that got us to about the 70% range, which is, compared to the 64%, still shows we had a good year. Certainly recreation programs have driven much better results, and that's been great to see. And that's, you know, cutting through the noise of not being fully staffed and those issues. It really does come down to, you know, hey, the rec programs really did perform better, helped us to be above that 64% budget. So I mean, putting us at 70% from a major operating perspective. The last thing I just wanted to point out too is the capital fund. So again, page 63, we see an ending fund balance for our capital project funds of $6.7 million, which certainly seems like a lot. But what I wanted to do for our capital funds is just kind of run the scenario: had we gone through with the Lodge project based off of our initial bids, and had we completed the Pribble project, which has been deferred for various reasons, but had we done those projects this year, we'd really be ending the year with about $1 million in capital project fund balance, which would essentially be funding for the next year. So just wanted to try to put some perspective into those projected numbers. Again, a big piece of it is unfilled positions, delays in projects, and just wanted to
provide that context there. So again, I think really good looking projections, but you know, I think we still need to be careful based on rising operating costs, the hope that we'll be fully staffed going into next year, and the hope that we're able to forge ahead with most of these plant capital projects.
So 64 is not just fully staffed, it's also fully allocated expenses for capital projects too.
No, 64 doesn't include capital. That 64% is just our major operating. We don't really
need 64.
So 64 is yep.
Assuming fully staffed,
really assuming fully staffed, and
capital
for
us. And capital for capital.
Assuming fully staffed for the full year or the remainder of the year?
It would have been fully staffed for the entire year.
Okay, so we'll probably end up somewhere in between.
Probably, yeah,
very close to the. We're not doing lots of money for the wall this fiscal year, right?
Correct.
So that's a big chunk of capital.
Correct.
$400,000, $500,000 only look at this. It's reap benefit at the, quite frankly, at the challenge of staff is present.
Yeah.
Staff being strained and yeah.
Believe me, we'd like all those positions filled. We just can't find people to fill them.
Well, I think that we take some of those funds and that's how it'll part of this year. I mean, it's not obviously not $100,000, but like, I mean, that's what ends up happening when you have pretty much that sort of staff is tends to be very, very thin. Picking up shifts and picking up work, it's got to be willing to think about if we're going to have hundreds of thousands in surplus, thinking about not spending hundreds of thousands, but doing some like stop.
One time boom.
If that's something that you think is appropriate,
we'll bring back those recommendations.
Especially if the goal, if you guys have a goal, and Adam, you mentioned this in the presentation, the goal is to have retention out there, then there should be a way to think about you can retain people with compensation, you can retain people with vacation with bonuses.
And we'll bring all that back when we talk about budget and what we're proposing for a way to increase this. I agree. We're looking at all of our benefits and everything retention.
It's always fun.
I like that. I like the support. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else? Any other questions? All right.
Nice to see the fitness center is still doing well. It's strong. It is good. And I'll say, one of the things that I appreciate about the fitness center, it's in the black. And it's in the black, but also doing awesome things with the community.
Yeah.
I love that we're having the day. I love seeing some of the new tour extension. It's called Kids Mary. And we're running this one tradition.
And one.
Nice job.
I'm really happy to hear that because there's some people who maybe aren't as receptive to that program being in town. We are totally opened our doors and they don't have to be gap down in town.
Last week I was working out about 4 5 students today and some of the rights went outside, because they didn't want to work out with the teachers, their teachers been there, which is amazing. It's great to see them. A lot of that is good for my skills.
All right. So we'll move on to my reports. Just a reminder, the IPRA IAPD conference information went out, I think, last week or the week after or before. If any board members would like to go to the IPRA conference, there's a lot of good tracks for commissioners, especially on Saturdays. I think they really focused that day on them. So if you're interested, please just let me know and if you would like to sign up.
Yeah.
And this, will you? Okay, great.
Is that Bart who said he's going?
Yeah, I love it.
Good.
It's awesome.
I've been to it in the past, and honestly, it is really interesting. So,
it is on my last birthday.
Does that know? Okay. So, if anybody else finds out they want to, we'll make sure we get you all signed up and everything. I will be taking on the board chair role this year, so starting in January. So you will see requests come in for extended stay for conference, because I will be there Wednesday night all the way through Sunday for meetings. So you'll see that coming through. But I'm very thrilled to be serving in that role. We have John, Kyle, Bobby, and I will be attending the Legal Symposium on the November 3rd. Again, that is also open to commissioners, but commissioners want to attend that day. But that really dives into some of the legal changes that are happening, and the lawyers from all the firms do presentations with IEPD. So that's a really good one to also attend. I attended a meeting on October 6th with our area representatives, so Senator Morrison, Representative Morgan and Carol. So that was the part that was in Lake County. So we kind of have two different districts. Senator Morris actually has taken over all of the restructuring. It was a really good meeting and brought up a lot of different issues and concerns. And some of those were, I brought up that our changes to early childhood concerns and how that affects our working parents and the raising costs and everything like that. And said we would really like to serve in some capacity to figure out how to fix this problem. We brought up the one sustainability initiative that doesn't allow park districts to enter into contracts for solar panels. You know, most houses you can enter into a contract with a solar company because they want to sign a 10-year contract to get the solar panels for free. Well, we're not allowed to enter into contracts longer than 3 years. So that was kind of your left out. So we suggested, is there a possibility to change that law for that initiative? And both Morris and Carol jumped on that right away and said they would sponsor a bill on both sides if we get that ribbon. So we'll be working with IEPD to get that ribbon, because right now it's not cost effective. We checked in solar panels in the past, not cost effective for us to do so. But if we got for free in 10 years, that may change the story. Maybe we'll get opportunities. Not saying we are or not, but maybe we give open to doing more park districts to do that, which we're thrilled about. We also talked about park grants. I'm thrilled that the number has gone up and the budgeted amount. We're really concerned about how fast they're paying their bills. So, for example, when if we finish projects and we get out everything, and it's taking a long time to get our money back. As you know, we pay everything up front, we spend our bills, and then we get a check written to us. Some districts are experiencing really long delays. I think Lemieux had an example of almost 4 years. So obviously, if you have, say, $1 million outstanding and we're not getting interest on that, that's a problem. So we really advocated for that. So just so you know that we're out there, we're talking to legislators. If you ever see something that you want, you bring up to legislators, please let us know. We have all their numbers and we've developed a great relationship with them. So that was a really productive meeting. We did apply for the onsite grant, and speaking of that, for West Park, I think it'll be 6 months before we find out anything about that. And have also applied for a tree inventory and tree management plan. This has been in the works. The village applied, they were able to receive it. This would be a complimentary if we were able to do the same thing when they look at the whole tree canopy for the whole district and just develop a plan from there. So we're hopeful that we'll also get that. I'm going to throw it to John to talk about the tax levy health insurance.
Yeah, so again, the county has not finalized the 2021 levy, so we pretty much had to work off of the estimates to formulate the 2022 levy, which especially in the reassessment year is ideal, really resulted in us having to anticipate for 2 years of new growth in our levy, which is a bit more detail in the action item than the property tax levy. Ultimately, we are going to be required to hold a truth in taxation hearing because the increase exceeds 5% this year. Historically, the district has held that hearing regardless of whether it exceeded 5% or not. So that meeting will be November 15th, and that'll keep us on a timeline. They haven't adjusted when we're required to file with the county. That's traditionally the last Tuesday of December, and that's still the same this year. So we're still on track for that. As far as health insurance goes, again, more detail on action item here. But ultimately, we have one more year with the Dermot Health. We made our recommendation in terms of what plans to offer, which are actually the same plans that we offered employees in the prior year. We do need to get that selection over to the Dermot by the end of this week. So assuming it's approved this evening, everybody is, we have consent to move forward with it, we will go ahead and make those selections and be set for open enrollments, which begins November 14th, ends December 2nd. I'm just trying to keep, trying to keep the benefits as competitive as possible in this environment, too. So we feel like we are able to accomplish it and we'll figure them out.
The staff is also working on the budget, and that is due to me pretty soon, and then we'll begin to talk about capital. We're hoping to bring maybe a capital discussion to the board in November or December about future capital. It'll be a very short discussion, because we'll be using a lot of our already dedicated projects. So like prior years, we had a robust discussion now on pretty much all, as John indicated, of our major capital money has already been spoken for through WAP and the crib wall and lake fund that we've been planning for the last couple of years. Marketing, Aaron's been marketing WAP already, believe it or not. It's time of year and getting geared up for that.
It's
our 50th WAP season this year. It's incredible. It really is incredible how far ahead of the curve this district was for outside refrigerated ice rinks. Considering some districts have only put them in the last 10 years and very few in the panel. So kudos to the board site in that facility. Parks and planning, you'll see the Lakefront Park design and construction agreement. Obviously, that we had a lot of discussion on that. So this is just getting the ball rolling in design so that hopefully, as we discuss the timeline, whether we want to start construction in spring, we're still working that out, or after the 4th of July, we're going to have everything ready to go and for the whichever scenario we go for. Kyle, you want to talk a little bit about the community hall AD project?
Sure. So unfortunately, I don't have a very positive update to give. Like a lot of things, there's extremely long lead times. We got word that a critical component for the system, the mixer, had the estimated lead time of quarter three of 2023. We had discussions with the project engineer and other industry professionals about switching manufacturers, and basically through those discussions determined that this is pretty much industry standard, and to jump out of the middle of one very long line and then end up in the back of another very long line wouldn't be recommended. There are components that we are able to get on hand to start the process to kind of get some of the front end work done. But unfortunately, that mixer being such a long lead time is going to hold up the completion of the project pretty significantly. So we can hope that supply chain issues relax and that timeline bumps up, but it's not looking like that project that's going to get done in the time frame that we had hoped for.
So we'll stick with the system we have now for the meetings and hope for the best. We also have been busy with Saffron House window and top corner. So if you have been down there, also the stairs, the bleachers here. But you know, nice. Are they looking nice?
Yes, for those people who sit out there and call them watch the
bottles.
So. Yeah, it's nice. It's really nice. So it's amazing. You don't think they're bad until they start cleaning them and pressure washing them, and then you're like, ooh, that's it. The Watts dashboards have also started coming in, and the construction starting on that with the completion before we open for the season. And crib wall, like Kyle's been meeting with the village on the crib wall project. If you recall, we're going to work with the village on that, and there'll be a formal agreement coming whenever the lawyers are done with it. So we're going to split the cost with the village 50-50. We both have a need to get down to the beach and the water plants, so those will be split after any grant. So, for example, the village is able to get a $700,000 grant. That'll be dispersed, and whatever's left will be split between both agencies.
So can we go back to the WASP for a second?
Yeah.
I know 2 years ago when we just think last winter, is WASP people open to the public that this year so people can back rooms and offer rooms and that type of
no intention of having to go in the public.
Unless obviously.
Very good question. Yeah.
That's good. We can get like that.
Yep.
And you get good vending sales. You get good vending machine sales. Yeah, we do.
Park beautification. Kyle's been working with the local landscaper that we contract with for beautiful new fall planting beds. In addition, you want to tell them about what we're going to do at COC?
So, yeah, I met with Jane Chen from Chen Studio about some areas of WASP with the expansion of the Glencoe, Connect Glencoe Trail and Green Bay Trail. Just looking at some ways to kind of soften up the aesthetic in the park and some intersections of concrete. Sidewalk, so she's going to develop some plans, hopefully have those for us in mid-November, put in some perennial beds, add some intersections, add some color, and pop and soften up kind of the aesthetic appeal, so it doesn't look so kind of concrete jungle.
Like. Which a little, once they put that extension of the trail on the other side, it's really not concrete, you know, really prefer in that area. So we're going to try to soften that up, and we've had feedback from the public, so we've heard that, so we're trying to do something that will soften it. We'll go on to Glencoe Beach. The Voting Beach closed for the season. Very successful season. So there will be a full report next month on that operation. We've been doing a lot of special events and community outreach. Special kudos to the Bobby and Nate have been helping PTO with the movie, was there a movie in the park? Yep, and then Glencoe Youth Services, I believe, had a teen battle bands and something else, was there something else? Anyways, we continue to help other community organizations in in-kind services using some of our expertise and equipment, which we like to do and help with those events in the community. The Great Mud Run was phenomenal, so kudos to all the team for putting on a successful event with over 425. This is a series in other communities. There's probably 5 other communities that have this run. They don't call it necessarily a mud run, but obstacles like this, ours definitely have the largest participation, which is it's interesting because ours is probably the smallest community that offers it. So I think it's because of the way the team works together and the creative obstacles and always trying to one-up it the next year. So.
No one has better pictures than the two you have in the front of this report.
Isn't that great? Jenny found those.
Oh, really?
That was all new technology. No, anybody is, so it was really neat. Early childhood continues to be very busy with all their fall activities and help with vision and hearing and reading and things like that. Basketball's already started. That seems to be such a long season, but there's a travel basketball clinic and there's in-house that we're working on, along with the parent advisory group for basketball, which I think Blake's team started last year. Yeah, and it's been very, we get a lot of feedback at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season, how we improve. And it's, I think it's been very beneficial. And it gives us a chance to explain why we do some things. Because, okay, sometimes, you know, put out there like, well, why don't you do it this way? And we explain. And they're like, oh, that makes sense. So kudos for Shannon for doing that. Like they've already indicated, our new programming for Days Off School has jumped back to pre-pandemic levels. Very popular. With very creative offerings. So
how much demand do you think is out there? Because I've heard from a bunch of folks that are waiting to get into some of these school day off. What do you think is a function of awesome programming, which I think is definitely part of it, as A or B, the sheer fact that we're now post-pandemic, community is jam-packed, there's no houses for sale, there's some more people. Is some of the population driven? Is it population not demand or is it more we're marketing there and people are like,
domination all. Yeah.
And we continue from having the kids home with you for all the COVID days off.
Yeah. That's been everyone's
yeah.
there, right? I mean, do we know what the population of Blanco is? Is it
school district enrollment's off?
Yeah.
What was the question?
It's about 30 is lower. So, local
so not so, so 2-3%.
Yeah, but
not
in those groups. So I think I'm a little concerned long term with not being houses for sale in the economy moving in. So longer term trends, we don't get the families moving in right on that may impact some. But if you look at kids
yeah.
the report, it's possible.
And we also again, you know, we have a lot of young people. So we still have a good 10-year growth. But
it's the challenge, like I'm thinking of sort of Bob's world, you know, my world at work. We always look at member acquisitions. It's
yes.
just a huge part of the life cycle. And people stop moving in, people grow up. That means you're going to have things where, you know, today's children's circle demand. When my kids are in children's circle, you guys are begging people to come. And now we don't have that problem. So it's reasonably to be cognizant of the population.
You do, but you have to also know that there's also a lot of very elderly population right now, and they will eventually move out. Whether, you know, whatever, doesn't matter the interest rates for them, they'll eventually move out to more smaller houses and
yep.
nesters and stuff like that. So you have that evolution.
Yeah, you absolutely do.
I think we're also getting back to pre-pandemic kids club rates. You know, we used to, that's why we're doing this WATS innovation,
right.
because we're versing the teams for our kids club, and we're seeing us get back to those numbers again, that we need that much later.
It'll be interesting to see with the school projects, the school's buyer protection. So I'm sure they, you know, that's their bread and butter, understanding.
Yeah.
Next in terms of staffing. It'll be very interesting to see. It's just for the long term.
It was interesting to step on the planning commission now.
Yeah.
And they had a demographic study. I could probably find it in my iPad here, but Glencoe is older than all of the surrounding communities.
Yep. Yep.
We have an older population, which is really interesting.
Yep, that is true.
So Winnetka is significantly younger than Northbrook, and I think so.
To
Lisa's point, there really aren't a whole lot of downsizing opportunities in Glencoe. So it's interesting, but it's interesting too. One of the other things that I found fascinating was that income levels in Glencoe were shown lower than they used to be and lower than their peers, but actually they pointed out a lot of that is because they're retirees that aren't earning a regular salary, and so it's distorting in making and I think it's interesting to see the age and then the income.
When did it from taxes?
This is the census came out
huge drop in income, which no.
So maybe it was a lot of work for airlines in 2020.
Well, 2020 data was kind of long data.
Yeah. Because we have to think of that census right in COVID.
Yeah.
You know,
interesting.
But it's also, you're earning versus like, maybe your retirement.
72.
Yeah.
I want to add something real quickly here. This is not a new phenomenon. Glencoe, in comparison to its neighbors, has had at least 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, we all have an aging population in terms of just the country, of course, with the baby boomers and things. But Glencoe has a more significant aging population per capita. So that is not a new phenomenon. And maybe part of the problem is it's so fabulous, nobody wants to move.
But it's been the parks.
It's the parks, yeah. But
yeah.
it does make me realize all of the things we've done that address the needs of adults and mature adults, the fitness center, the walking paths and things are put to good use for a reason, and that we really have addressed the data. So that actually, that's how I'm looking at this.
That's very true. Okay. Any other questions about my report?
I want to say one thing. I attended the mud run. I know a couple of the commissioners who typically are there were out of town, but it was so well run Lisa, I know for the first time, was not able to be there. She had another commitment. And I watched the staff because I was handing out medals. And everything ran so smoothly. All the families were excited. Nothing was in chaos. Everything was, other than the fact that no matter what, kids would constantly have their little penny on the front of their number on the front rather than the back of their t-shirt. Other than that one thing that was difficult to adjust, everybody was it was just really well done. And Lisa, you should be, I know you are, very proud of your staff for the way they handled it.
Yeah, I am.
Okay, if we're on to action items,
we are.
Okay, I entertain a motion to approve ordinance number 944, amending the appropriation ordinance for fiscal year 2022-2023 as presented.
So moved.
Second. Discussion? Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Kobe?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes.
Mr. Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay. John will present on the item prior to voting.
Resolution 945, truth in taxation.
Oh, it's 940. Oops.
Wait.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, it's B. Number B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's B.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right, sounds good. Thank you. So, as I mentioned, 2021 final extended rates have been delayed due to compatibility issues with the Cook County Assessor's Office. So, our levy this year was had to incorporate estimates for what the 2021 amounts would be, and ultimately, the determination of whether truth in taxation would be required was. Determined based off of estimates too. As a reminder, any increase of 5% or more in our operating levy would require that truth in taxation hearing and can equal that hearing regardless. We have historically done that every year. So the tax cap, commonly referred to as PTEL, that took effect in 1994, and that limits our increase in our operating levy from to either 5% or CPI for that given year. This is the first year that we're not going to be using CPI. So we are going to be using the 5% there. As you're all well aware of, CPI at December 31 well exceeded that 5% number even, but that is what we're actually capped at. So in order to entirely capture that 5% into our operating levy, and given the fact that we don't know what the property was for 2021, we need to levy for an amount beyond the 5%. So I believe it shakes out to about 8.94% in our operating levy this year. And again, that's mainly being done to ensure that we capture the new growth. And we're also recouping as much into our operating levy to fund increases in wages, increases in our operating costs, increases in our utilities, and as you can imagine, we're seeing increases across the board in our operating expenses. The good news is when we factor in the debt service levy, it does equate actually to a 5.9% increase, so a little less. And that's because our debt service amounts are relatively flat. They're based off of a scheduled repayment once the bonds are issued. I will point out that even if we levy for the full 5% this year, if you look at 30 years that that PTEL has been in effect, and you break that into 10-year increments, the previous 10 years would be at about 1.95% average. That's factoring in 5%. So that really just points to those years that we had 0.7 CPI, 2% CPI, 1.5% CPI. And we know our operating costs were far exceeding what those CPI increases were in previous years. So if you look at it from that perspective, that 1.95%, including the 5%, is still less than the first 2 10-year increments under PTEL, which were right around 2.5%. So this helps kind of put that in perspective.
And also recognizing that, you know, everybody is dealing with inflation, rising cost of living. We did take a look at, you know, our reserves in the debt service fund, and if we are going to be able to utilize those for abatements within the debt service levy, and ultimately reducing the debt service levy by about $240,000, which again, that's us using existing reserves, existing restricted debt service fund balance to fund the fiscal 24 debt service payments. So when we do that, that gets us to a bottom line increase of a little over 2%, 2.04% to be exact, compared to the prior year. That overall bottom line increase was 2.16%, so we're really right in line with where we were in the prior year by going through and abating, again, a portion of the debt service levy. So just to summarize, given the current economic environment and significant rise in operating costs, we feel it's important to capture, you know, not only the allowed increase, but also any potential new growth that's out there. That we're, you know, working off of estimates requires us to be a little more conservative in that estimate on new growth. So we are, well, that's what's really being reflected in that 8.94% number. And while still being cognizant of the challenges that district taxpayers are facing, where we're looking to help ease that burden and abate a portion of the debt service levy to have a relatively flat increase when looking bottom line year over year. Any questions or comments?
I have a question. Sorry, just a previous conversation. So, what happens if we set our new growth assumptions are conservative? And we'll get that before the end of the year. So if there is more new growth than anticipated, do we increase other aspects of the levy to get the same amount?
That's a great question, and certainly we're in uncharted territory where the issue is that Tuesday in December, we need to make sure that we're on track for that. And with the truth in taxation hearing, we would probably need to work with legal counsel on this, but there's specific requirements with truth in taxation when we need to have the legal requirement out compared to when the meeting's held. It can't be, I think, greater than 14 and no less than 7, somewhere around that range. So if we went to amend after that truth in taxation hearing, we'd probably need to just get advice of legal counsel, make sure that would be okay, and again, just working to make sure we hit that Tuesday in December.
Okay.
But again, the way we built the levy is it would have to, just kind of knowing what we know, talk with the village, just have an idea of where the growth historically has been, and, you know, based on building permit data and whatever information they have, we're able to make a pretty good assumption. And again, we have to be a little more conservative, so I'd be surprised if new growth weren't captured.
And then if we didn't capture it all in this levy, let's say there was a timing difficulty and we could go back and amend it. Did I read that we could still capture that now?
So this is where it gets kind of interesting. So there is a new law that went into effect this year, where, because it's always been traditionally, if you miss it the first year, it's done. It's done. But there is a new law that came out that basically gives you the option of telling the Cook County clerk to use either your prior year final extension or the average of your previous 3 years. And the intent there was to capture any new growth that would have been available that you didn't capture in that first year. The caveat here is we already hit 5% the first year. We're about to hit 5% again. So there's still potential for permanent losses if we don't capture all the new growth in the current year, because if we're running obviously the 5% again next year, there's been no room. Even if we're running at 3%, there's still only obviously 2%. You know, so there's still potential there for loss of new growth, even with the new law.
When we do this, the 8.94% is designed specifically for new growth at 3 point. Something for new growth at that. Yeah. We can also compensate taxpayers that have been there and established residences that. The pool of all of those folks will not go by 1.5%. It doesn't mean that Carol's will go 8%, mine will go up 2%, you can have it at 5%. But that can happen in the year anyway. But the pool of old established houses is effectively 5%, and the optics of the 8.94 is designed to capture specifically new growth that has not been taxed before.
Right. And it's very unlikely that 8.94% will be the increase. It's certainly
we're not
less than that. It's the cushion that we have to build in to make sure we capture that.
Right. And then, Hoover Estates, is that happening anytime soon?
I have not heard that that is going to
work. Mm-hmm.
I think it may be in the original one that's looking to sell. I'm not sure.
Because that would be the biggest.
That would be the biggest one.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I see where you guys are coming from. I see where the project is coming from here. I think it's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, but knowing that the established taxpayers are still getting that law of internet rule 5%, I understand what you're
saying. All right. I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 945. In taxation as presented.
So second.
Discussion. Yeah. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hobie?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes.
Mr. Spain?
Yeah.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes. John, can you present on another item? This is the 2023 Federa employee health insurance renewal.
Yep. So, as I mentioned, open enrollment is coming up here in mid-November. This is our third of a three-year contract with Federma Health. And overall, we're looking at about a 4% increase in premium. So certainly manageable given current environment. There were no real significant changes to plan offerings this year. They did add a $2,500 high deductible plan. That was really it. Historically, what we've offered is an HRA PPO option, a high deductible health plan with health savings account PPO option, and the HMO. Federma allows us to offer free plans. Those are the three that we offer. Last year was the first year that we offered the HRA PPO option. Prior to that, we had offered just a straight PPO and $500 deductible, which is the most expensive plan, but certainly takes out some of those variable components. So really what we did this year was evaluated the three plans that we offered last year, compared them to the $500 PPO plan, and factored in things like utilization rate for the HRA, disparate contributions for the high deductible plan, because we need to incentivize people to take that plan since it is cheaper and a higher deductible. And based on that, the two PPO plan options still come out it's less expensive than the PPO plan, with really very similar offerings. No real significant change in coverage with that HRA account. So we're proposing to offer the same plans this year: the HRA PPO, high deductible PPO, and the HMO. As far as employee contributions go, this is where we're proposing a significant decrease, actually, in the cost to the employee for them to participate in the HMO plan. We're doing this for a couple of reasons. So it's less than 10% utilized by employees who are eligible for health insurance coverage. We actually only have three employees use it, and one family employee with family coverage is using it. And so it is somewhat underutilized. And just from a financial perspective, if we looked at it, factoring in the decrease in premium, so I think we're at a little over $200 for a family, $205 for a family HMO monthly contribution. That's proposed at $70 this year. So even factoring in the reduction in employee contributions, the district would save about $4,300 per year for any employee the family coverage that shifted over from the HRA plan to the HMO plan. That number is about $1,700 for individuals. It's a very good network to the employee, very employee-friendly. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, Federma estimates that upper 90 percentile of claims are in-network and covered.
So very cost-friendly plan, very minimal out-of-pocket expenses with the original plan. So just a way three people took that plan.
Three.
So there are more than three employees in Park District here, which means that some of these are not from here. There has to be a reason as to why a lot of the rules are implemented. Everybody's personal situations are either different. I did not take it personally, and I could just.
I wasn't asking, like, I'm not asking anymore. Like, there has to be a reason why we have, you know, and maybe some of there are health insurance, but I'm curious. It's still,
I think he's 20% superior plan.
I think the HMO kind of has a stigma of, hey, I can't go see my specialist. And that's really, you know, people want to go to see a specialist without a referral. I think that's the real big thing.
Yeah.
People assume PPO coverage is, you know, old standard, and this is what I want. And there was honestly a little reluctance last year when we moved from a straight PPO plan to the HRA plan. You know, from all the feedback we've gotten, people are pleased now with the HRA plan. So if you have those people that are necessarily going to the doctor, they're just, you know, they have their annual checkups, preventative care, it's a no-brainer to take the HMO.
So as someone who's probably more medical expenses than anything for the past 2 years, I'm on HMO, it's fine. Do you have a doctor finder out there on the website saying, hey, well, you know, here's my doctor, I could put them in.
Yeah, it's maybe that was part of it in the past. Last year was the first year that they switched from Cigna to Blue Cross Blue Shield. I know the people that were in the HMO really, really liked it.
Right. It'd be interesting to see if it really is, you know, $49 to keep the family, then you really need to find someone to come in or to do it to, like, Q&A.
Yeah.
In front of the derma or someone else to say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about this. Why would I do it? Why wouldn't I do it? And you know, so why would you find a doctor? Because that's real savings to me. What do you think the boss is done?
Yeah, and it's
real savings
to them, to them too.
Yeah.
Again, not only the monthly contributions, but just the out-of-pocket costs.
Agreed. So, I mean, like I said, it makes sense. It'd be interesting to make sure that there is education out there. If I were looking at this, I would think there's something wrong with HMO because it's so cheap. That's my initial reaction. So that was
fair
educational
point. And it definitely is going to be us making sure that we get the education for the employees and they understand the options. The other component there, so as you can see, individuals we're going to offer it at no cost. And you know, we're still going to be incentivizing employees who don't need coverage to waive coverage through us. And that's through the insurance buyout that we introduced last year. That was very successful. As a reminder, in the prior year, we introduced a buyout to where family coverage declines or waived coverage within our plan. It was a $5,100 buyout, 50, I believe, for individuals and 3,500 for employee plus one. So when we did that, we saw immediately three family eligible employees last year who were enrolled moved over to the buyout. And as a reminder, that's about a $25,000 savings. If we have a PPO HRA employee family, that's about $32,000 a year. We're paying $5,100 for them to waive their coverage. So that was very successful. Right now, we have five employees who decline coverage and are receiving the buyout. So some families we had some new hires during the year, they've opted for the buyout too. So it's we have seen some success. So we would propose to continue with the same dollar thresholds. Shakes out to about 20%, I believe, which is where we came up with those numbers in the prior year. So we would propose to also keep the insurance buyout in place too.
Yeah, I think that was the big naysayer on that one last week. I think it was too rich. Where did we have five? I think yesterday, three, right? We got five, so the worst of worst.
Any other questions?
Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the 2023 Derma Employee Health Insurance renewal as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion?
I do think we need to have some good training on what it is we should train on what we should choose. So it's a lot of work.
My husband is sure that we can do this.
Perfect. That's it. Yeah, I mean, look, it's important, so stay.
We'll take notes of that. See if we get out of this. All staff can get one coming up. I think we find it anyway, so. Okay, all right, roll call vote, please. Commissioner Bourne? Oh, sorry. Commissioner Jacoby?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Commissioner Snyder? Yes. Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Delighted that.
All right, motion passes. Okay, I entertain a motion to approve Jenny Wackel to serve as the district's deputy local election official as presented.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Covey?
Yes.
Mr. Snyder?
Yes.
Mr. Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
All right, motion passes. Okay, Kyle's going to present to us the film.
So the board had previously discussed and approved in the budget the purchase of an installation of a gas-fired kiln for the ceramic studio. We're at the point where we're ready to advance that project. Like many of the things today, the kiln has a long lead time of 7 months. With this project being targeted as an August 2023 shutdown project, it's recommended to purchase the kiln now, independent of bidding, installation, and construction. In order to ensure that we have that kiln on hand and then we can bid the project at a later date and line up the work for August 2023 shutdown. The kiln that we're going with is a Bailey. This kiln is able to pass through our existing doorways and rampways. Previous kiln that was originally designed would require doorways to be opened and railings to be taken down. That obviously comes with a significant cost, talking about taking down door frames and cinder block, and then all the construction work required to put that back together. That comes with an estimated savings of $88,000 by switching to the Bailey kiln. So to us, it's kind of a no-brainer to move forward with the Bailey kiln purchase at this time, get that ordered, and then start the process of bidding the actual construction project.
And this is a sole source, so there's not ability to, because we want this particular one.
Definitely. We're talking about the studios of everything that we should be doing. So hopefully they install and not find stuff in the pipes that we don't want to find. All last time.
We actually found the existing ductwork that might like, create some further cost reduction. So it's very, very encouraging kind of initial stages. So, yeah.
I'm going to add one thing. I think, Lisa, tell me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure the formal request came to the board 4 years ago, 3 years ago. They've been incredibly patient. So, I mean, incredibly patient. The program has not waned in that time. It's really popular, and they're putting out such incredibly good work, and I know they need this, so... yeah, moving forward it's about time.
Yep, you're right. I think we finally approved it right when the pandemic closed down, but we were talking about a year before that. And this will be the next step to elevate the work that students, especially adult students, can do with.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it is true, we are bursting the seams for our ceramic offering. Yep. So
it's in due time, and I'm really happy you've got the right equipment and you're moving with it.
It's Maddie's favorite merchant.
Oh, and that too. Okay.
Yeah. So fully support. Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the sole source purchase of the Bailey M44208 gas kiln in the amount not to exceed $40,000 as presented.
So moved. Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Covey?
Sure.
Mr. Snyder?
Yes.
Mr. Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Motion passes. Okay. I was going to present again the rain gardens
and stewardship agreements.
And stewardship
agreements. So the first part of the board memo would be just the third year of our contract with Keystone Associates for the stewardship agreement. We wanted to bring attention that we are looking to have two new rain gardens installed, one at Shelton Park and one at 10S, which is at the corner of Green Bay Road and South Avenue. The idea behind these rain gardens is to address flooding and surface water management within the parks. These are unprogrammed green spaces that we're looking to just attempt to use rain gardens to help alleviate that flooding in lieu of traditional stormwater management, plumbing, these pipes, concrete reinforced structures, things of that nature. This is obviously an attempt to help address flooding, but also kind of fits in with our sustainability green initiatives as using native plantings. PISO is our stewardship group that maintains our existing spaces at Everly and Takeith. And so basically what's in the memo is the approval of the third year of the contract that was bid out 2 years ago, with a slight increase in the stewardship amount to take care of the two new rain gardens at Shelton and Park and NS.
And one other thing is that we put in here two different types of sheeting for the, or plantings for the rain gardens. So the one in Shelton will be plugs, which will be more substantial. We'll get much more flooding there. And then the one on Green Bay, we're going to try seeds. We want to see which one is more successful. Floods are actually more money. So if we can do this rain garden successfully with seeds, that might be a way to go to be able to do more in the future and incorporate our budget. So we're going to try both to see if seeds are successful in some of those smaller projects.
It's very simple, like the rain garden, the different types of plants would absorb more water and the rain garden. So the grass is going to be higher.
That's the concept for it, yeah.
Okay, all right. And we did request that in these areas, the species that are planted do not grow tall. You can use some really substantially tall grasses, but we don't want blocks to be flat on sidelines along the corners and parks. Right. So these will be more mobile, native species.
We're going to try this because we don't really have the team budget to do big drainage, pipes and things like that for years probably. And since these are passive parks, it's unlike Hawk where we had to do the kind of drainage that we did because we use it so actively. These are parks that we don't want the water running over the sidewalks. So we think this would be a good sustainability measure. We're not putting the water back into the drainage or sewer pipes or whatever. We think that we're going to try this to see if this works.
And can I just say something real quick? It certainly is appropriate from a sustainability standpoint to do this, and certainly it's a try. But I was thinking that there is an educational/marketing component to this, and Aaron will certainly be involved, Lisa, in that, because people's perception, they don't know what it is that they're seeing as they're flying by on Green Bay Road, and if we can educate the community, educate the residents as to what exactly it is, why it looks that way, and what it accomplishes, that it doesn't cost the same, that it's good, better for the environment, and that it's more naturally sustainable, all of those things. Because I think, the initial reaction when things don't look perfectly landscaped, like a golf course, is sometimes negative. So this is, Aaron certainly will have, a role in this, in explaining this to residents.
Very, very, very good point, Lucy. Yes, I totally agree. We have the signage up. We had a lot of that. Well, we still do here back in take up the mile trails. People like, that's what it's supposed to look like? Yeah, it's exactly what it's supposed to look like. so we have to do education pieces and maybe signage and things like that. Maybe that's something we can work with the Village Sustainability Committee and get the word out on that. So.
Right.
Great.
All right, great. I entertain a motion to approve the ESO and Associates proposals for new rain gardens at Shelton Park and Park 10S and the updated stewardship contract in the amount of $19,900 as presented.
So moved. Second.
Further discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Motion passes. Okay. I entertain a motion to approve Hitchcock Design Group's proposal for the final design, permitting, bidding, and construction services for the Lakefront Park tennis courts and playground renovations in the amount of $62,730 as presented.
So moved.
So, discussion. I'm happy we're moving ahead. It's been a long time coming. Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Govey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, Lisa, is there any other business?
I just have one other. The Glencoe Caucus has requested that if we could change our December committee meeting, call the calendar here, because they want to have a town hall, which is traditionally what they do before the election. And they're asking if we can, they want to use this is a room you used to use because it's big enough for everybody. And I'm sure all the commissioners would like to be there at town hall. So if we could move the regular committee meeting from December 6th to December 13th, that would be able to facilitate that. I'm just wondering. You guys have your schedules in front of you, yes. And you're able to do that.
We may have our work on it right. So we do have the 6th to 7th.
We could totally do it any other day. So, because we have plenty of time to advertise, if you want to do the next day, December 7th?
The starting of the week of the 12th, that's when. Yeah. So I appreciate it.
Actually, the Monday is better for
me. Oh, the 5th?
Oh,
I remember that.
Yeah.
What about you, Lisa?
I can do Monday the 5th.
Yep. Okay. Nice.
Great. So, Jenny, you got
I'll that? Check with Stephanie.
Okay, thank you.
I bet she can do it.
Yeah, I think I might. There's a possibility of traveling.
Okay, so that works out better. That does.
Great. Good.
Right now, we're planning on having the December 20th board meeting. Because school break does not happen, I believe, until like the 23rd.
Yeah. School starts, last day of school is 23rd.
So our plan is still to have that board meeting. I did want to ask you about January 3rd, but that is a committee meeting right now, and school is still out. And I know the summer is good.
I'm out. I'd love to look at that.
So is that okay with everybody else to switch the January 3rd committee meetings to January 10th?
I can do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, that works better.
Yeah.
That's reasonable.
That was Bobby that brought up. And it was nice job. It's different. So it's like, wow, okay. All right, perfect. That's all the business I have, and there is no need to go in the executive session from our perspective.
All right, so
make a motion to adjourn.
Okay, motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Okay, if there's no discussion, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Volpe?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yeah.
President Brooks?
Yes.
All right.